Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Manton's practical exposition of the Lord's Prayer. And we're still in the section, "And lead us not into temptation." And after having gone through the nature of temptations in the first couple of readings, I believe, last time we did, we continued on with the next overall point after nature of temptations. He says, give the reasons why this is so usual and evil we do encounter with in the world, and that's temptation. And he went through several points discussing that, and then came to a use. And the first point of the use was we should not be dismayed at them, and we did that last reading. And the second point, we should be prepared for them. And Lord willing, that's where we're going to pick up for this reading. And I will go ahead and begin. Again, he says, secondly, let us be provided and prepared against temptations. And to this end or purpose, I shall first give some directions how to resist temptations in general. And secondly, what to do in a special hour of temptation which comes upon the world. When there are terrors without or outside, and we know not what evil may be a-coming, and our hearts are full of doubt, and how we may support and bear up ourselves. So back to the first point first, to direct you as to temptations in general, number one, you must be completely armed. Ephesians 6, verse 11, put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Not a piece only, but the whole armor of God. Otherwise, you will never come off with honor and safety from the spiritual conflict. The poets feign of their Achilles that he was vulnerable only in the heel, and there he got his death wound. A Christian, though he be never so well furnished in other parts, yet if any part be left naked, you are in danger. Our first parents were wounded in their heel. Who would have thought that they which had such vast knowledge of God and his creatures, that they should be enticed by appetite? And Solomon, who had the upper part of his soul so well guarded, that he should be enticed by women. To see men of great knowledge to be unmortified and miscarry by their sensual appetite is sad. Sensual can also just generally mean anything driven by the senses. But in this case, it could also have the sexual side as well. He continues, a Christian must have no saving grace wanting or lacking. 2 Peter 1, verse 5, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, etc. There is all the graces, and they must come out in their turn. We need faith and virtue, zeal and holiness, and knowledge to guide it, and patience to arm it against the troubles of the present life. And we need temperance to moderate our affections to our worldly enjoyments. Temperance is not just regarding alcohol drinking. It's, he says, any of our worldly enjoyments. We need to temper our affections toward them. And godliness, we need to have godliness that we may be frequent in communion with God, and brotherly kindness that we may preserve peace among our brethren and may not make fractions and ruptures in the church. And we need charity or godly love that we may be useful to all that are about us. And that can be include giving charity as well. There is use and work for all graces, one time or another. Sometimes we shall be tempted to a neglect of God. At other times we shall be tempted to make a breach upon brotherly kindness. At other times there will be a breach of charity. Sometimes the devil seeks to tempt us to fleshly wickedness. Therefore we need temperance. Sometimes to spiritual wickedness, to error, therefore we need knowledge. Sometimes to raging with despair, and then we need faith. We need the whole armor of God. For Satan has his various ways of battery and assault. Sometimes through ignorance we miscarry and run into error. Sometimes for want or lack of faith we run into despair and discomfort. Sometimes for want or lack of temperance, violent, corrupt lusts overset the soul. And lusts can be more generally any corrupt desire of the heart, although again it can include the sexual one. So we need, for a lack of temperance, we need temperance to come against violent corruptions of our heart, which can overset the soul. Point number two, we must often pray to God for renewed influences. We must not only get habits of grace, but pray for a renewed influence. It is notable, next to the spiritual armor, the apostle mentions prayer, Ephesians 6:18, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance. We never receive so much from God upon earth as to stand in need of no more. And therefore, though you put on the whole armor of God, yet praying always with all supplication in the Spirit. Why? Because without the Lord's special assistance, whereby he actuates those graces, we can never defend ourselves, nor offend the adversaries, or do anything to purpose in the spiritual life. Strength of grace inherent will not bear us out against new assaults. Habitual grace, it needs actual influence, partly that these graces may be applied and excited to work, Philippians 2:13, he giveth to will and to do. God gives to do, that is, excites that strength you have and carries it out to work, and then that it may be directed in work, 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 5, and the Lord direct your hearts into the love of God and into the patient waiting for Christ. Every time we would make use of the helmet of salvation, when we would lift up the head and wait for the mercy of God, the Lord direct you, we must be directed, and not only so, but that it may be supplied with new strength, for it is said, Isaiah 40, verse 29, he giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no power, he increaseth strength. And he does continue it, Luke 22, verse 32, I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. Thus will God keep us in dependence, so we're dependent on him for those liberal aids and constant supplies of his grace, without which we cannot use the grace that we have. Point three, you must resist, 1 Peter 5, verse 9, whom resist steadfast in the faith. James 4, verse 7, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Stand your ground and then Satan falls. In all those assaults, Satan has only weapons offensive as fiery darts, none defensive. We have not only the sword of the Spirit, which is an offensive weapon, but the shield of faith, that is the defensive piece of the armor. Therefore, your safety lies in resisting. Now, this resistance must be, number one, not faint and cold, but strong and vehement. Number two, thorough and total. And number three, constant and perpetual. Number one, not faint and cold. Some kind of resistance may be made by general and common grace. The light of nature will rise up in defiance of many sins, especially at first. But this must be earnest and vehement. It is against the enemies of your soul. Paul's resistance was with serious dislikes and deep groans. Romans 7, verses 15 and 24, the evil that I hate, and, O wretched man, how shall I be delivered? In most cases, a detestation or peremptory denial is enough. When the devil tempts Christ to worship him, Matthew 4, verse 10, "Get thee behind me, Satan." In other cases, there must be serious disputes and repulses. When Eve speaks faintly and coldly, the devil renews his assaults with more violence. Genesis 3, verses 1 to 3, "Hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die." She speaks there warmly and with too impatient a resentment of the restraint, and too cold in the commination and threatening. Therefore, the devil works upon her when he saw she amplified the restraint, for if she said more, indeed, we must neither eat nor touch it. The touching was not part of the initial restraint from God. A faint denial is a kind of grant, and therefore your repulse to Satan must be vehement and strong. In many cases, slight Satan answer with indignation, as though a dog barks, yet the traveler goes by. Satan cannot endure contempt. At other times, argue for God strongly. Now, the great argument that quickens you to this lively and vehement resistance is to consider your soul is in danger and all your eternal concernments. So some expound that Ephesians 6, verse 12, "We fight not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness in high places," in heavenly places, it is in the original. No worldly concernments must go so near as that which concerns the eternal good and salvation of your souls. What would the devil have from you but your soul and your precious enjoyments, your peace of conscience, communion with God, your hopes of eternal life? And when Satan comes and bids nothing but worldly vanities, we should repel them with indignation. A merchant that has a precious commodity and a chapman bids him a base price, he puts up his wares with indignation and will not so much as regard him or bear him. So if you have a precious commodity and someone gives you a very low price, you just walk away with indignation. So when the devil comes and would cheat you of your precious enjoyments, you should repel him with indignation when there is such base and unworthy trifles to come in competition with your great hopes. As Christ, Matthew 16, 26, "What is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? What, shall I lose my soul, my hopes, and happiness, and all for such paltry things, for a little temporal advantage?" Number two, it must be a thorough and total resistance. So that was faint and cold. It should not be faint and cold. Number two, must be thorough and total, a total resistance. When you yield, the devil encroaches upon you. We are bid in the Canticles or Song of Solomon to take the little foxes to dash Babylon's brats in pieces. We should not yield to Satan a little. The devil at first cannot hope to prevail for greater things. Therefore, he seems more modest in his temptations. But lesser sticks set the greater on fire. So smaller sticks cause a greater fire, or cause the greater sticks to become burning. When you entertain lesser temptations, this kindles in your souls like a fire, and it is easily blown up into a great flame in your conscience. At first, when the devil came to our first parents, "Hath God said," and then, "You shall not surely die." "Hath God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the garden?" The first temptation was more modest. The approaches of Satan to the soul are gradual. He asks but a little at first. "Aye, but it is a greater matter if we grant it." Consider the evil of temptation is better kept out than got out. The stone on the top of the hill, when it begins to roll downward, it is a hard thing to stay it or to stop it. We cannot say how far it will go. Says the deceived heart, I will yield but little and never yield again or any more. The devil will carry you further and further until he has left no tenderness in your conscience. As many that thought to venture but a shilling or two, yet by the secret witchery of gaming, they play away their estate, clothes and all. So I guess they were gambling and they gambled, oh, just a little bit, but end up gambling away everything. So many that think they will sin but little at first, at last sin away all, they at last, or in the end, sin away all principles of conscience and profession of godliness. That was number two, thorough and total resistance. Number three, it must not be temporary for a while, but perpetual. It concerns us not only to stand out against the first assault of Satan, but a long siege. Satan, what he cannot gain by argument, seeks to procure by importunity or persistence. But resist him, says the apostle, steadfastly in the faith, 1 Peter 5, verse 9. As his instrument spoke to Joseph, from day to day she ceased not, the lady tempting him, Genesis 39, verse 10. Deformed objects, when accustomed to them, seem not so odious. So the devil hopes to prevail at last, or in the end, at least temptation will not seem so odious. But you must keep your zeal to the last. As we rate away an importunate beggar or persistent beggar that will not be answered, to yield at last is to lose the glory of the conflict. Grace must not only have its work, but its perfect work, James 1 verse 4. So let all our graces, temperance, godliness, and brotherly kindness have their perfect work. That was the end of those 3 points under resist, which was also point three. Now, continuing with point four, after resistance, we must resist. Number four, there is required watchfulness. 1 Peter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant. You that are not ignorant of Satan's devices should watch that you give not him, you do not give him an advantage. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 11, nor an occasion, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 12, lest Satan tempt you, nor a pretense, Galatians 5, verse 13, to the flesh. Certainly, he that would not be foiled needs a great deal of holy, H-O-L-Y, moderation and constant jealousy over his heart. He had need to guard his senses. Psalm 119, verse 37, turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity. And to look to his company, who he keeps company with, Psalm 119, verse 115, depart from me, ye evildoers, for I will keep the commandments of my God. And to avoid all occasions of sin, not rush into them, but keep out of the way, Proverbs 4, verse 14, enter not into the path of the wicked and go not in the way of evil men. For this is to ride in the devil's quarters, to run into the mouth of danger. Heretofore, these were wholesome instructions, and why should they not be so now? The devil is not less subtle, or sin less odious and dangerous, only we are more foolhardy. Therefore, stand not at such a distance as we should from occasions. So that's what we end up doing. We end up getting too close to sinful occasions. It is easier to avoid the occasion than the sin when occasion is offered, as it is easier for a bird to fly from the snare than, when entangled, to avoid danger. Therefore, when you run into harm's way, you tempt Satan to tempt. to tempt you. And when you look not to yourselves, it is just with God. He's just to let you fall into the snare. Okay, that was the first part of being prepared, which is give some directions how to resist temptations in general. Now, Mr. Manton continues, secondly, there are special times of temptation when Christians should look to themselves. There is an evil day, Ephesians 6, verse 13, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day. And there is an hour of temptation upon the world, Revelation 3, verse 10, I will keep thee from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world. There are certain times when God is proving what men will do, or trying them, and when the devil is likely to make a great advantage of our discontents and afflictions. When things fall cross to our desires, and we know not what evil waits for us, how should we do to behave ourselves? Number one, be not overconfident or overdiffident. Not overconfident in running beyond the bounds of our calling to cast ourselves into dangers and hazards of temptation, nor overdiffident by base flying from or giving way when God calls for valiant resistance. Both ways is the devil, or in both ways, the devil is likely to assault us, either of them by making us foolhardy. So Satan seeks to drive us beyond the bounds of our calling, to put us out of our place, that we may be a prey, P-R-E-Y, to him. As men used to trouble the water, that they may rouse the fish and draw them into the snare, and drive them out of places of safety where they rest, so the devil seeks to put us out of our safety. Peter would needs come to Christ, Matthew 14, verse 28, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And we see he sinks before he could accomplish his purpose. So when we are overconfident and run out of our calling upon hazard, then we are ever and anon ready to sink. But we should not turn back when God calls us to be valiant in a resistance. Should such a man as I flee, Nehemiah 6, verse 11, observes Peter's dastardliness when he ventures without a call into the priest's hall, a question of the damsels overturns him, a single question from a young girl. He that was so cowardly when he was out of his way, look upon his boldness when he was in his work. Acts 4, verse 7 to verse 13, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, they marveled. John was the disciple of love, and Peter was the fearful disciple. Yet how full of boldness, courage, and zeal when they were called and singled out to give proof of the reality of God's grace. And therefore, we should never be over forward nor over backward, but own God in his truth when we are in our calling. Let not Satan bring you out of your place to cast yourselves as a prey, P-R-E-Y, to him. Number two, in an hour of temptation, we should be more solicitous about duties than events, and about sins than dangers. As to events, God is concerned as well as you, and he will order them for his glory. It should be your great care that you may be kept blameless to his heavenly kingdom. 2 Timothy 4, verses 17 and 18. The Lord that hath delivered me out of the mouth of the lion shall deliver me from every evil work and will preserve me unto his heavenly kingdom. However God deal with you as to events, and whatever dangers attend you, this should be your care mainly, that you may not sin, but be kept blameless. David often begged direction, that he might be guided in his trouble, and not falter and do anything unseemly. Number three, be more jealous of Satan's wiles than of his open assaults. Natural courage and the bravery of a common and ordinary resolution, together with deep engagement of credit and interest, may do much to make us stand out against assaults, against open force and violence of evil men, but there needs a great deal of judgment to stand out against the wiles and crafts of the devil. Flesh and blood will not so easily bear us out against the secret ensnarings of the heart. The young prophet does thunder out his message against the king, 1 Kings 13, verse 3, yet was enticed by the wiles of the old prophet. So we may stand out against an open assault and apparent violence, but take heed of the secret wiles of Satan. Number four, the wiles of Satan are to enforce and draw us into those corruptions which are incident to the season. Here is the great point of spiritual wisdom: to be seasoned in our mortification and to withstand the spiritual evil that is apt to grow upon us in the time of our fears. Psalm 56, verse 3, "What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee." Then our great business is to cherish our dependence upon God, to prevent distrust and unbelieving thoughts of God's providence. As on the other side, in a time when we are likely to be corrupted with ease and prosperity, then our business is to watch against security and deadness of heart, which is apt to grow upon us. As Nazianzen said, "When things go prosperous with me, I read the Lamentations of Jeremiah. I remember the mournful passages which befall the people of God, and that is my cure." So to prevent despondency in a time of fears and to encourage our souls to dependence. Now, when our wills are crossed, dangers attend us on every side, and we know not how far evil will break out to the overturning of all. What are the sins incident to such a time of trouble, and how do the wiles of Satan come upon us? Number one, impatience. Genesis chapter 30, verse 1, "When the will of Rachel was crossed, she said unto Jacob, Give me children, or else I die." When we impatiently fret against the Lord, Psalm 37, verse 1, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity." Number two, murmuring and repining against the Lord, that is another snare. Jonah 4, verse 9, "I do well to be angry, even unto death," when he was crossed. Discontent at God's providence gratifies Satan exceedingly. When we will justify ourselves and think it a kind of zeal to be angry and pet against providence. Number three, a spirit of revenge against instruments, when we do not sweetly calm the heart with the remembrance of God's hand. 2 Samuel 16, verse 9, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head." Thus, when wicked men disturb order, the heart is apt to rise in revenge. Therefore, we are to calm our hearts. Number four, there is fainting in duty when we begin to give over prayer and are discouraged and are loath to wrestle with God in an ordinance. So we don't pray and are discouraged and wrestle with God in an ordinance. Hebrews 12, verse 12, "Lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees." When a man's hands begin to wax feeble and he is discouraged in the ways of the Lord, "My foot had well nigh slipped," said David in Psalm 73, verse 2. Number five, there is closing with sins with sinful means and running to them for an escape, as Saul, when he was crossed, 1 Samuel 28, verse 7, "Seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her." When we go to carnal shifts and unworthy means, These are very natural to us. Number six, despair and distrustful thoughts of God, though we have had much experience of his goodness. David, 1 Samuel 27, verse 1, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul after all his experience. After all his experience, he still said that. Number seven, questioning our interest in God by reason of crosses or the doubtful posture of our affairs. Judges 6, verse 13, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? Now, all these are the wiles of Satan. Ride out the storm upon gospel encouragements. This will bear us up. It is but a moment to eternity. It's just a small amount of time compared to eternity. It is but a light affliction and will work for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 17. Okay, that is the end of overall doctrine number one, which we started way back at the beginning of And Lead Us Not into Temptation in the first part, which was the temptations are a usual evil wherewith we encounter in the present world. And so all the points up to this point have been under that doctrine. Now he continues, he says the second point is this, doctrine number two, that if we would not be overcome by the evil of temptations, we should earnestly deal with God about them. But we are going to go ahead and stop there for this reading, and then, Lord willing, pick up with that the next time. But until then, go seeking God daily for help to put on his armor, his spiritual armor, that we may resist the devil. May we seek him daily in prayer and in the means of grace to fill our hearts and minds with love for him above all things and to hate sin, as an evil against God. And may he grant us that strength and desire to resist the devil and be aware of his wiles and live with God's help in all holiness and godliness all the days of our lives. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.